The Tom Woods Show, episode 1470.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you believe in homeschooling, but you also believe in not running yourself ragged and in maintaining your mental health, then you need the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum, for which I made 400 videos on history and government. Get it from me, and I'll throw in three exclusive, unbelievable bonuses you can't get anywhere else. How do you get it through me? Head over to ronpaulhomeschool.com. Hey, everybody. Tom Woods here. Very glad to be joined today by actor, producer, screenwriter, and comedian Vince Vaughn. And I'm sure many of you know that he was a supporter of Ron Paul. So when he contacted me not too long ago, I said, well, by the way, while we're at it here, how about coming on my show? And that is exactly what is going on. I asked my supporting listeners group, what should I ask Vince Vaughn? And that's where I am drawing the questions from. So supportinglisteners.com is where you need to go to get into the Tom Woods Show elite. So you can be part of stuff like this. I'll solicit questions very often in situations like this. Vince Vaughn has been in, you know, something like 800 million movies. Gene Epstein's favorite is Swingers. Also, The Lost World, Jurassic Park, that's from a while ago. More recently, Hacksaw Ridge is one that's a big favorite among my listeners, but a great many. He's got just an enormous body of work, and I'm delighted to welcome him to the show. Vince, thanks for being here. Welcome.
Great to be with you.
All right, I got a bunch of questions that I have a private Facebook group, and I just said to people, I have you coming on. They're all going berserk, dying to ask you things, so I'm going to defer to them and ask the kind of questions they want to know about. Now, first of all, you got to know on a podcast like this that this question is coming. How do you describe yourself politically?
Well, I guess I would describe myself more of a constitutionist, you know, a libertarian. I definitely believe in ethical principles and being consistent with them, you know, applying them both across the board, whether it's, you know, domestically or foreign.
Now, of course, I know that you supported Ron Paul, at least in the 2012 campaign. In fact, I saw you at his house once.
That's right.
How did that come about? Like, how did you get interested? Did you find out about him through the debates the way most other people did?
You know, I learned about Ron a little before that, and I was really blown away when I learned that the Federal Reserve originally was sort of my largest entry point, that it was private and that the government at large had no kind of oversight over it. And that really led me in historical, you know, learning about how, you know, first how the Fed was turned over and, you know, then FDR's confiscation of gold and Nixon taking us off the gold standard. And it was really mind-blowing to, you know, discover these things. And then I wonder, you know, the internet was so helpful because otherwise you would have, you know, had to go to a library and research things and just time in the day. And then I saw that Ron was really the one that awoke me to that. So I sort of started following him and listening to him. And then I reached out and called him and was just really sort of impressed by his way of speaking and all the things that he was talking about where that was concerned. And that was sort of the start of my journey. And I was thrilled when he was in the debate. You know, if you look at even the platform today, how much he really, you know, changed what the course of it was compared to when he was debating and they were asking him that was, you know, what a conservative is. And now it feels like a lot of the things that he was saying that is sort of more of a mainstream conservative view as it would be.
Well, certainly the war issue now is not toxic anymore for Republicans or conservatives to say that at the very least they're skeptical of any more wars. And I think he really blazed the trail on that issue in particular, in addition to the Fed.
It's really interesting. I think that's well said. And it's interesting to think that someone who would be conservative minded would have been more pro-war. And he said it very well in the debates. He said, you know, conservatives have a long history of getting us out of these sorts of things. And you're right. That's something that's now, you know, thankfully more mainstream.
All right. The second thing that is you just have to expect that is going to be coming is the political opinions you have are, let's say, not the majority in your industry. Let's put it that way. So what's that like for you?
You know, it's interesting because as a kid, younger, and I think a lot of us were this way, especially in my field, people would bring up, you know, politics would come up and you'd have a disagreement with a friend and you would move on. I've never chosen friends off of it. And I've had a lot of close friends who, you know, don't change my opinions on things. I try to, you know, I hold consistent to what I believe. I'm always open to, you know, hear new information, change my mind, but I don't really try to sacrifice my principles to be liked. And I've, my close friends have always remained my close friends. And even if we have a disagreement on stuff, it's never been an issue. But there's, you know, and for the most part, you know, it's been fine. There have been some, you know, articles or things that come out that are, you know, definitely trying to come after me based on my opinions. I've definitely been subject to that. But I find more often than not that people like to engage me in conversations. I find even on movie sets, a lot of my time will be talking about these principles. And it's kind of fun. You know, it's usually well-constructed and a good discourse. But they'll come to me with a topic that they're really, you know, excited to talk about and feel like, well, surely government, you know, should have a stronger role in this. And then we'll kind of talk about it. And, you know, on occasion, people will kind of start to like that and, you know, adopt those principles. And other times they'll say, well, that sounds good, you know, like the normal response. But I find a lot of it, a lot of times I find myself in good conversations where people are actually excited and curious about, you know, concepts. And then, you know, they sort of start exploring and talking about things.
Well, I can say as somebody on the outside that the impression we get of Hollywood is that it's monolithic and intolerant of opposition. And so my question would be, do you think there are other people who might have views like yours who just, they just want to do their work? They really just don't want to stick their necks out and be involved in a political conversation. They'd rather just work and not court controversy.
Yes, I think that's true. You know, I originally would try to avoid, just because as an entertainer, I didn't feel a calling to go out and sort of, you know, I don't think anyone likes getting unsolicited advice from anybody, but there was a knowledge, I think, that I was not in step. And so there was always a persistence by interviewers and stuff to try to, you know, get me into these conversations. And I was always honest with them, eventually would sort of, you know, talk about my principles or how I thought about things, but never have felt a big thing to go out constantly. Definitely, you know, Ron is really the only candidate I think I've ever endorsed, you know, probably because I was most really in agreeance with him on stuff that I find inconsistencies with other candidates. But yes, there's groups that are really just sort of, there are people that are definitely, you know, not open to thought. And they feel as if based on, you know, your book, I think, is very good. The Politically Incorrect Guide to American History, and so much as what you say is right, that they're working on a set of givens or facts that aren't necessarily accurate. And so they sort of see themselves as fighting against something, and in actualities, and in some cases, they may not have all the information.
You know, you don't sound like it, but I have to ask anyway. Have you personally ever had political ambitions?
You know, I haven't. I've always been very interested in history and politics, but I haven't really had an interest myself to throw my hat in the ring or be involved in that. But I've always been interested in the you know, in the area, and history was really, I think, the starting point of that.
I'm curious also, this is another question that my folks were asking, if you have any opinions on unions in your industry, like the Screen Actors Guild, do you have any experience with those, and do you feel like they're helpful, or what can you tell us about them?
Well, you know, I would err on the side that ultimately I think that the unions are probably not as constructive. You know, I do think you have a bunch of well-intended people. I think it's, you know, I think Friedman said, right, you have the do-gooders and then you have the special interests, the people who stand to gain from that. So, you know, I think ultimately I'm not a union person. I don't know that the promises are actualized in a way that's constructive. And yet, you know, people feel very much so here that, and in a lot of industries, that the unions are actually sort of, you know, crusaders and sort of help them. I'm much more of a believer in free markets. And, you know, I look at, I even where minimum wage or something is concerned, that, you know, I always find it interesting that politicians or people in the entertainment industry will have interns. And yet, you know, there's some price fixing of a wage where someone else who might be inexperienced or new to the workforce is not given the same ability to value the opportunity more than the price. So I feel that, you know, the unintended consequences and the casualties of it are usually greater than the outcome, not to mention the consolidation of, you know, power and who runs these things and, you know, what are done with these pensions. And there's just a lot of, you know, the media seems just a lot of time to stop when it comes to investigating those things.
I've had people curious about in your career, now leaving politics aside, is there a role that either you're especially fond of or where you yourself really identified with the character? It didn't seem like this character was a million miles away from the real Vince Vaughn.
Well, I think with being an actor, I think I've said this before, I think in life we all have lots of sides to ourselves. And a lot of times, especially when you're younger, you get comfortable presenting one thing because you feel safest in it, right? You're the athlete or you're the academic or, you know, whatever that one role is that you feel most safe. But the reality is you have different sides of yourself. And sometimes those things get shut down younger. You don't feel confident in that area. And the fun thing of being an actor, I think, is that you can draw on different aspects of yourself and kind of bring it to the forefront. And imagination is, you know, a great gift. So I wouldn't say that there's a character that's exactly like me, but I think they're all, you know, different parts of yourself, different sides of yourself. It's kind of fun to explore.
That's, I think, very well said. How about this? Is there a particular project you've been involved in that you are especially proud of above all others?
Boy, it's hard to say. I've been fortunate, you know. Recently, I've worked with this director I like quite a bit, Craig Zoller, with Brawl and Cell Block 99 and Drive Across Concrete, which I enjoyed working with him, and Hacksaw Ridge is recent that I enjoyed. But, you know, a lot of the big comedies like Wedding Crashers and Old School and Dodgeball were fun. And then, you know, starting off with Swingers and more of those independent and Nate movies that I did were great. So, you know, I've been fortunate and I've enjoyed them all while I'm doing them. I really sort of look more forward than I do kind of reflect on them too much.
Yeah, I think that's true. A lot of the musical groups I listen to are really old, and everybody wants them to just keep revisiting the songs from 30 years ago, and that's
right.
Not that much fun for them. They want to look ahead to what's still to come. Now, you mentioned Hacksaw Ridge.
Stand-up comics always laugh at that because if a band gets one album, they can tour forever. People love it, but a stand-up comedian, you got to come up with a new hour of material.
Oh.
Someone would pay a bunch to do the same hour.
It's brutal.
It's brutal.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I've sometimes thought about like Pink Floyd, for example. I mean, their key albums stretch from Dark Side of the Moon to the Final Cut. And that's basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 albums. So, and okay, one of them's a double album. So maybe we're talking about at most 7 hours of music. And they have made a fortune just playing that over and over and over. It's,
yeah.
I mean, what a country. It's unbelievable.
Right.
But on the question of Hacksaw Ridge, did that movie affect you in any way, like on war or conscientious objection?
It really did. You know, I found it an interesting subject for a war movie. You know, here's a war movie with a person that was making a decision not to carry a gun. And I was unaware of Desmond Doss's life in the first read of that screenplay. But I found it very moving that he had these convictions and principles and a faith that was so strong that he would, you know, really feel that he had a calling to go and save people. And that fact that he chose to save the enemy as well, but refused to kill, I just found to be really interesting. And that was an interesting film to make. Obviously, you know, Mel's a tremendous filmmaker, very polite guy. And I was just, you know, being exposed to that story and learning about him and sort of what he went through. I mean, the truth of his life was far greater than the Hollywood movie, which is not always the case. But that was one of many battles that he was involved in. He was in multiple theaters in World War II. And, you know, when he would go out at night to save people in the film, they have a friend go with him, but in actuality, nobody would. They were terrified to sneak around in the dark like that, and he was unarmed, and, you know, just looking for wounded people to save. So I think, you know, the story is, in this case, it is definitely stranger than what we made up.
You know, in that movie, of course, you just mentioned Mel Gibson. How toxic is he these days? Has that all passed?
I think he's terrific. You know, I really do. I think he's extremely intelligent and a tremendous filmmaker. And he's a very kind and compassionate guy. He's does a ton of things for people privately and always has. And very involved in many ways, not only as a mentor to filmmakers, but also, you know, lots of different, you know, charities and activities and stuff that he's involved in. And I think he's just a terrific storyteller as well.
How do you stay informed about current events, what's going on in the world? Do you have websites you look at, publications you read?
Yeah, I think the internet has played a much more key role than any sort of pen to paper, and it's been that way for a while. So, you know, I do watch, switch around between news and network stuff to watch, but I tend to go on to, you know, different sites on the internet and look at articles and things like that. And of course, go to, you know, Ron Paul's newsletter, the Ron Paul Report, I think he calls it nowadays.
Right. He's publishing all kinds of things. He's got a podcast. He's got a website with articles on it. He still writes. And he's turning 84.
Amazing.
Yeah, I want to be that guy when I'm 84. You know, they're going to have to.
You've done a terrific job yourself.
I appreciate that. What are your current projects?
My current projects, I have a few things. I'm in a film called Arkansas that I did with John Malkovich and Liam Hemsworth. And then I'm about to go do this film in October in Atlanta, which is kind of a horror comedy movie.
What's the name of the film?
I did mention the name, but I just wait on it for a minute here. But everything is all but done. But I will wait just a little bit to mention it.
Oh, okay, fair. I just want to make sure we didn't miss anything. So you're telling me that nobody comes up to you out of the blue in the industry and says with a chip on his shoulder and says, "All right, Vaughn, I know you got all these crazy views. You know, what's the matter with you? I mean, nothing like that happens."
No, I don't experience that. I mean, I've had, you know, people who are interested in drawing into a conversation, and sometimes their mind's made up. But I don't really experience that. It's not really how it works. And, you know, there's a lot of people in the industry that think more similarly. You're correct to say that they don't always carry it on their sleeve. But no, I haven't. You know, I haven't really had that experience. I don't put myself out there confrontationally, though, where I'm looking for argue's sake. And I feel like whenever I've had discussions with people, I've always, you know, I've tried to listen and you know, present logic. And I find most of the times that when I do get into conversations, they're kind of enjoyable, and people, you know, tend to want to come back and continue to talk about stuff. So. It's not as if it's the main thing that I walk around with, but I do find that when I get in those conversations that, you know, I'm able to sort of, you know, ask them questions and debate things. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes people just don't have a lot of information on subjects.
Yeah.
And it will send them sometimes going to look up stuff. And there's been occasions where I've been, you know, people have, you know, things or say things that I hadn't heard before. So that's, you know, you're always open to, you know, information and ideas.
Do you find there's a particular approach where you have more success? Are there questions you ask them that get them thinking, or an elevator pitch that you make, or anything that seems to crack through more successfully?
You know, what's funny is Peter Billingsley, who works with me, and he was, you know, obviously he was in the movie Christmas Story. He was Ralphie, "You'll Shoot Your Eye Out." He is terrific at sort of staying non-emotional and really almost in a Socratic method way, presenting questions, and he's very patient, and I've seen him do very well with it. I try similarly to, you know, talk about the principle at hand that's being discussed, you know, and make it less about other things. And as you well know, you know, there are some people that are just, these are very emotional subjects, and they're not really open to a conversation. They're not necessarily looking to be rational.
Do you have any particular interest in the 2020 election cycle?
Well, I think you always pay attention to the elections and what's going on. I mean, there's been a lot of things happening lately. You know, this whole Epstein thing is bizarre. I'd be curious to hear what your take on that is.
I don't know what to think. I mean, I think it's interesting to see that this is one of these times when it's not just one side of the aisle that has the so-called conspiracy theory. Everybody thinks something fishy happened here because the numbers just don't add up. And people had predicted this. They said, look, keep an eye on this guy, because obviously there's going to be huge pressure to have something done to him or for him to do this to himself. And then this still happens, and it so happens that the camera was malfunctioning. I mean, come on.
there's so many things to it that are crazy. And I think you're right. And I think that's part of the illusion that gets you to sort of be argued for a party or support a party. It's sort of divide and conquer, right? Like Caesar said, if you're outnumbered by the enemy, get them to fight each other. So, but I do think there's probably, you know, more of a central thing going on than it is the party lines, potentially.
Yeah. And I think there are some things that do cross party lines, like you find a lot of people in the Democrat side who are quite happy to carry on with the foreign policy that we've had and across party lines. And yet across party lines, you'll have a Ron Paul and a Tulsi Gabbard who maybe want to do something against it.
Interesting, right? The one thing they seem to agree upon is they want to bomb another country.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. And that's the one thing the media will cheer the president for. They'll cheer him for that. You know, he bombed somebody. Hooray.
Right. They really, or they browbeat and say that no one understands how the world works. And yet you can point to recent history with any of these campaigns. And it's not as if you could suggest that there's been, however you're defining success, right? It's not as if you could point to them as far as, you know, the economics it's caused, the lives it's caused, the continued chaos in a particular country that still exists. But yet they're just able to go with so much momentum and suggest this has to happen.
Well, when I was a youngster, and I'll let you go in a minute, I went for all the wars. I just believed all the propaganda, and it took me a while to change my mind. So I was politically aware from age 12, basically. I watched the Democrat and Republican conventions of 1984 on television. I mean, that's the kind of kid I was. So how old were you when you would say you first became politically aware?
I was the same age. I remember very well. I was very young. I was born in 1970. So I remember the transition to Ford and my parents talking about that. And I was very much aware of the election with Reagan. And the first one, obviously, with Carter, and that's when I sort of became interested. And like yourself, I think I was really a believer in a lot of the propaganda and was not as consistent. I think it's not till people start to realize potentially the money system and how money really works in the country and these kinds of things that aren't taught, you know, in primary schooling. And, you know, all parents will say it. They'll say, gosh, you know, how do they come out of school and no one talks about debt? Or how to write a check? And why aren't these things taught in school after 18 years?
Yeah.
Then you say, well, that's true. But then you say, you know, what's more important than even, you know, navigating institutions that you're going to come in contact with as an adult? And there's very little time spent on, you know, the IRS or any of these kind of subjects. And I think once you start to look at those things, it's hard to suggest that, you know, all branches of the government are altruistic for the individual's growth. There's enough things there that you were not taught, that you're not aware of, that really affect you, that it does, you know, hopefully get you to start to question things and to, you know, for me, got returned to sort of the intent of the Constitution. Why was it so important historically to limit central government? Why was there such a debate about a central bank, even a government-ran central bank? Where did these thoughts come from? And, you know, going back to, you know, Greece and Rome, and why did these guys feel so strongly about this? And I guess similar to you, as I became aware of things that I didn't even know existed or how they worked, it really started to give me a greater appreciation for why some of these decisions and checks and balances were put into place.
Well, I'll leave with this. I find it very interesting that you mentioned the Federal Reserve and finding out about that as something that really got you looking at the world differently. Because in the 2008 campaign, when Dr. Paul was also talking about the Fed, at the time I remember saying, and it's in a blog post somewhere, and I'm glad it's up for the world to see forever. A lot of times my advice is good. This was not good. I said, you know, I don't know why Ron Paul's talking about the Federal Reserve. It's too complicated. Nobody cares. I mean, I care, but most people aren't going to. It's just, it's not a good use of his time. I mean, this is the dumbest possible advice, because I think that was the issue that galvanized a lot of people who had never heard the Federal Reserve talked about in a presidential campaign before. So thank goodness he didn't listen to me on that. That was a big, big blunder.
Well, it's been one of your few.
I appreciate that. That's generous of you to say. So I want to keep an eye out on what you have coming out. And I want you to know also that my folks in my little group were saying that they you know, even though I'm glad to hear that it hasn't been like there's a target on your back or anything in your industry, that's really great. Nevertheless, we do appreciate the fact that we've, you know, there's somebody like you out there in Hollywood who will stick to his views come what may, and who's not belligerent about them, but that's what he believes, and he sticks to it. You know, it's inspiring, and it's a good example to a lot of people. So we appreciate that, and I appreciate you talking to me today. Thanks so much.
I appreciate all the information you bring to us and all the great conversations and access to all this terrific information and to your viewers as well. So thank you.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for today. Remember, if you're a homeschooler and you're thinking of using the self-taught Ron Paul curriculum in order to maintain your sanity because 90% of the work is done for you and you're not running around running yourself ragged, make sure and join the curriculum through my link. I mean, why not? Because through my link, you get free membership at my Liberty Classroom site. You get an autographed, personalized copy of my Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. You get a special course for middle schoolers on the foundations of liberty. You get those bonuses only through me and only when you click the order links through ronpaulhomeschool.com. That'll take you to the checkout page, and then you go from there. But ronpaulhomeschool.com is my page, and that's where you get those bonuses. So check that out, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.